Thanks for listening to Schlereth and Evans On Demand. Did you know you can listen to us on Alexa? Enable our skill today, then say, Alexa, play 104.3 The Fan.
Mike. What day is it, Mike? Hump day?
Oh, you know it. You know it. And I was immediately, Mark Schlereth, greeted with a tweet this morning. Evans, you're such a turd. Way
really?
To report the wrong information on Baker.
Oh yeah, that's everybody.
Everyone's in full walk back mode
right.
on that one.
Yeah, Baker walked it back and said, "Well, it was taken out of context." And I said that I couldn't believe I went number one overall. You know, I mean, the bottom line is, yeah, and you know how this goes, Mike. You get into GQ. What is it, GQ? What do they put in the water at GQ? Because everybody just starts barking, you know, everybody starts just giving it up over at GQ. But, you know, they put something in the water, and then the next thing I know, you're saying something that you probably didn't want to say, and the rest is history. You know, I mean, you said it. You came out with it. You went full blow it up on Daniel Jones. I mean, that's on you. That's not on anybody else.
Here's the quote. Blows my mind. Some people overthink it. That's where people go wrong. They forget you got to win. Either you have a history of winning and being that guy for your team, or you don't. Jones was 17-19 at Duke. Baker, of course, won the Heisman and was very successful at Oklahoma. You don't have to do a lot of reading between the lines to understand what he was saying. I won at Oklahoma. This guy didn't.
Uh-huh.
How does he go that high? Winning in college matters. And
yeah,
he's saying, so, you know.
Yeah,
but he tried to walk it back.
Right. Winning matters. Mahomes, did Mahomes win in college?
No, he did not.
No, he didn't. Mahomes didn't win
in college. Didn't hurt Cliff Kingsbury.
Right. Yeah. So, I mean, you can kind of start it and end it right there with, John Elway didn't win in college. They didn't have a winning record with Stanford when John Elway played there. I mean, like, you took a shot at somebody. That's what you do, whatever. That's Baker Mayfield. So there you go. I'm not going to sit there and cry, about it, but that's where you're at right now. And, for a guy that keeps a list on people like me, this guy's got a list of people that he doesn't like. It's just, again, another reason, Mike, that I don't buy the Cleveland Browns. You see what Odell Beckham Jr. came out with? He said that his trade was personal. It wasn't a business move. It was personal. They wanted to send him to Siberia.
Yeah, they thought they'd send me here to die.
Yeah, to die, right? That is the place you're playing right now, Cleveland. You're basically bashing the place they sent you to play. And Cleveland has a rich, strong history of an unbelievably, just an unbelievably loyal and dedicated fan base. Like, they have put up with a lot for the last however 20 years or whatever it is. This team leads the league in stupid quotes and stupid activities.
Hey, a lot of people, myself included, going to just be sitting back and waiting to see how this team does. And if they flop and fail at all, oh, we will revel. I will revel in their demise. So,
yeah. Well, good. You should.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way it is.
You know, look, you've been the factory of sadness for like two decades,
uh-huh.
Okay? Win something, okay? If winning is everything, Baker, you're still a below 500 quarterback in the NFL. You haven't done squat, okay? You and your team have done squat.
But wait, the hype is real.
Yeah, the hype is real. Okay.
The hype is real.
Last year, he was 1-5 versus winning teams. So let's see a little bit more from Baker before he feels he has the right to go into magazines like GQ and start blasting other guys.
GQ is something.
Yeah, they got like some true serum that they give pump these guys.
I'm telling you what, they put you in fancy clothes. They take, provocative pictures of you. You start to feel like, I think you start to feel like pretty good about yourself. And that's when, the truth starts to flow. I think that's what's going on there, right?
We're hearing from, this guy's either a Baker fan, a Browns fan, or an OU fan. I'm thinking probably more OU.
OU, yeah.
OU.
Sure.
Probably OU. OU fans are a special bunch. Right, because you guys have never had someone take something out of context. Come on, let's be honest, all right? So when Baker clarified his comments, this is not what I said, just so we're clear. I also said I was surprised I got drafted number one, then was talking about the flaws in evaluating quarterbacks, where I brought up winning being important. Heard nothing but good things and wish nothing but the best for Daniel. Reporters and media will do anything to come up with a clickbait story.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let me tell you something. Don't you think, as he got ready to sit down with GQ, his people told him, hey, you know, be edgy. You know, I mean, this is GQ. You know, you got to make it memorable. You know, that kind of thing. So,
well, I don't know. I do know in our business a lot of things are they're not taken out of context. You say what you, they're not, well, taken out of context, they're not, the whole quotes aren't, because they used to do it to me at ESPN all the time. Like, I would be effusive in my praise for something about Tim Tebow, but then the yeah, but caveat would be, but, you know, he doesn't have any true throwing skills. And the only thing that comes out is Schlereth says Tebow has no throwing skills, you know? And it's just that quote. And so from a contextual standpoint, yes, that is true. That happens. It happens in our business all the time, Mike. You know that it happens in our business all the time. We take out some of the clarifiers to soften the blow of the quote-unquote quote. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And that does happen all the time. But the bottom line is you weren't provoked. You basically were asked about Daniel Jones, and you did say, you know, the truth came out there. You did say you couldn't believe he got taken sixth overall, and you thought winning was important. Like, those things are true. You did say that about him. And had you not, I mean, if you don't see anything that's not, you know, a little bit edgy, then you're not rolling it back right now. You're not backpedaling on it.
Let's see. People are trying to rally to Baker's defense. The Browns came in here and punked the donkeys in your house and now have a higher ceiling than the donkeys, and you all are still salty about it. This isn't about making the case for the Broncos versus the Browns.
Mm-mm.
Okay? I think the Broncos would be fortunate to go 8-8. Okay, this isn't about that. It's about a team that's done nothing for a couple of decades, all of a sudden walking around, you know, like they're ready to just take the league over. You haven't, to quote the great Mark Schlereth, you haven't put a drop of piss in the bucket yet.
Right.
All right?
And you haven't.
Why don't you do that first?
Yeah, I mean, I get it, and I'm down with that. I know that people, either Browns fans or OU fans or Baker fans, the OU fans and the Baker fans are gonna rally. But the truth of the matter is, and you know, I believe this, and I think it's a good, you know, I think either way you look at it, it's just a good lesson for life. Is that I think it's easier to deal with adversity than it is success, and I see so many people that have such a tough time dealing with success. There's so many people that have a, you know, even if it's a modicum of success, Mike, they become, you know, they go crazy. They go crazy on their success. And, you know, then we see you become somebody that you never were before growing up, that, you know, I mean, we see it all the time. So I think it's, you know, they had some success, even though they were, 7-9, they had some success that they hadn't had in years. And all of a sudden, everybody's picking them as the darling, and they're a super talented team. And I get that, but boy, there's so much more to winning than talent. There's just so much more.
I got to read this one. You're going to love this.
Okay.
I don't like Baker, but I agree with his statement. We're seeing the same way the media covers Antonio Brown. They take a non-story and twist it into fiction for ratings. You're telling me the Antonio Brown saga is fake news?
Right. Yes.
Really? That absolutely blows my mind.
Right.
That's fake news.
That we are making this Antonio Brown story into a big deal. We are.
Right.
Seriously? Seriously. Yeah. You mean there's somebody right now walking around thinking that and then taking the time to text us that?
Dude, it is unbelievable.
Wow.
When I talk about Zeke or I talk about Antonio Brown and the number of people, but that's the society we live in. We are snowflake soft, Nobody wants to take responsibility. We're all a bunch of freaking victims, right? Nothing is our fault. The world conspires against us. Like Antonio Brown, the world conspires against him, but God is with him. God wants you to get a helmet and get on the freaking football field. Right. That's what God wants you to do. He blessed you with that immense talent so that you could entertain us with your football prowess. Go do it. It is asinine. It's asinine the amount of excuses we make as a society.
All right, no excuses coming up from this guy, Booger McFarland, who was on the Monday night broadcast on ESPN. He joins us coming up next.
This is Steve.
Hi.
Steve loves manila folders.
It's true.
That's why he started a company supplying manila folders to large corporations.
In both white and eggshell.
What Steve doesn't love is spending time paying suppliers and browsing for loans. Luckily, First Bank offers time-saving treasury management tools and business loans, so you can spend more time with your passion, even if it's manila folders.
In both white and eggshell.
Okay, Steve. First Bank. Business banking for good. Member FDIC. Go to efirstbank.com/business for more details.
Booger McFarland was on the ESPN Monday Night Football broadcast the other night, Broncos and 49ers, and he's been generous enough to take the time to give us some more insight into what he saw Monday. He joins us now. Booger, good morning.
Top of the morning, gentlemen. How we doing?
We're doing great, Booger. Hey, congratulations on all the success. I'm really excited for you, Boog. Great job on Monday Night Football. Tell me a little bit. I know you spent a little bit of time with the team. What kind of difference do you think Joe Flacco makes for the Broncos as they've been struggling the last couple of years to find themselves a quarterback?
Well, I think it's a lot about confidence. You know, as a guy who played defense, I know what it's like to go out on the field and, you know, you shut a team down two and three and four quarters, and then all of a sudden you look up and you got 3 points, and you're like, man, how can we get this done? And you look on the other side, and you don't really feel confidence that you have a competent guy. I think right now with Joe Flacco's resume, with his personality being Joe Cool, coming in there with Vic Fangio's defense, which, oh, by the way, I think is going to be dominating, I just think that everyone on that team has confidence that they have a guy. Is Joe perfect? No, he's not perfect. Joe is a guy who's proven that he can get the job done on the highest level. And I just think that that's something that Denver hasn't had, is the consistency of that position. And they understand what it's like playing in Baltimore. So he understands, if I don't turn the football over, if I make sure that every drive ends in a kick, and my defense plays lights out, we can win every ball game. And that's all really you want as a player, an opportunity to win every game.
And I think from a contextual standpoint, you know, unlike Baker Mayfield where there's no context, I'm going to give some context. You played for a team in Tampa that had one of the greatest defenses on the planet at the time, but had zero offense. And then you switched and went over to Indianapolis where you had, you know, Peyton Manning running the show, where you had that ultimate confidence. So from a defensive perspective, it certainly helped you guys quite a bit, or helped you in your career to kind of have that quarterback.
Well, without a doubt. And I just look at our quarterback in Tampa, Brad Johnson. You know, Brad wasn't a Hall of Fame quarterback, but when John Gruden got the job, Brad came in, and Brad knew we had a really good defense. Brad's job was we had to get points in a timely manner. We didn't need 40 points. We told Brad as a defense, if you'll get us 17 to 20 points a game, hey, we won't lose many, buddy. So you don't have to take as many chances. You don't have to do things that are out of your comfort zone. We're going to run the football. We're going to do some play-action pass. And it's amazing the confidence that having a veteran like Brad Johnson gave our defense. And we had four Hall of Famers in that defense, but we still needed the confidence from a quarterback, and Brad did that for us. And I think if Joe will play the way that Vic and offensive coordinator Rich Scangarello wants him to play, I think he can do the same thing for Denver.
Visiting with Booger McFarland. All right, on Monday night you kept talking about Drew Lock as the quarterback of the future. Is that automatic? Flacco's only 34. Why can't Flacco be the answer here for 4 to 5 years?
Well, it just depends on your definition of the future. You know, for me, I'm looking 5 to 10 years down the road. I think Joe Flacco can be the quarterback for Denver for the next 2, 3, maybe even 4 years. But at some point, when you have a guy as gifted as Drew Lock, you have to look long-term, or should I say longer-term. I don't think Joe's going to be there 10 years. I think Drew has an opportunity to be there at least 10, especially with the confidence that I have in him after talking to him. I mean, if you visit with Drew Lock, you get a confidence of a guy who he's been under pressure for a long time. I mean, he grew up in Missouri. There was so much pressure on him to to go to the state school. And then when he got there, there was pressure on him to be the savior. So he's played with pressure a long time. I just like his confidence, especially how they're going to bring him along. They know that he's not ready yet, but they're going to bring him along slowly. So I've seen the guy in the SEC. He's played football against the highest level of competition, and I think he'll be really, really good at some point.
Booger, you mentioned that this defense can be dominating. You know about dominating defense from your time in Tampa. What is it about this defense that you see that makes you feel that way?
Well, to play dominating defense, there are a couple of things you got to do. Number one, you got to stop the run. And there are several different ways to do it. You can just commit a bunch of guys. And what does that do? That makes your defense have to play a lot of man-to-man coverage on the back end, which the Broncos have traditionally played with Chris Harris Jr. and even going back to when they had Aqib Talib. But I like the way that Vic Fangio and Ed Donatell are going to do it. They're going to play this two-high shell, and then they're going to run their entire defense off that. Steve, you know, it's a 3-4 defense. They're going to do a lot of two-gapping. And when you can stop the run with basically seven guys or the same number of blockers that the offense has, that gives the defense an advantage. And what that also does, it allows you to have a lot of guys dropping back in zone coverage. You don't give up big plays, and you create turnovers. So when you can stop the run, when you can create turnovers, and you don't give up big plays, now you make the offense go 12, 15 plays down the field. And, you know, offensive linemen don't want to block for 10, 12 plays. They're going to commit a holding penalty. And so now the defense has an advantage. I just think those are some of the simple characteristics of being able to play not just dominant defense, but consistent defense where you don't give up but 15, 16, 17 points a game. If you do that, you'll have a chance to win a lot of football games.
Busy with Booger McFarland. Just how much impact do you see Rich Scangarello making on this offense?
Well, if you go back to Joe Flacco's best season, that I think was 2014 when he had Gary Kubiak. So I think Rich is going to run a similar system. Joe talked to us about he likes to have defined reads, meaning he wants to go to the line of scrimmage and know pre-snap and post-snap where the ball is going and not have to go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Like, he likes things defined to him, and I think Rich is going to do that. The zone scheme, Stink, you are way more familiar with that zone scheme than I am. It is a you-know-what to try to deal with as a defense, because as a defensive lineman, it forces you to run side to side, and to do that for four quarters is tough. Now you run the boot action off of that. You get Joe Flacco on the edge. He's got a really, really good tight end, Noah Fant. You see what Cortland Sutton is doing. You see what Emmanuel Sanders has done already coming back off the Achilles. I just think that this is tailor-made for Joe Flacco to be successful. Oh, by the way, you add in Philip Lindsay, who I think is a perfect one-cut downhill runner for this scheme. Like, if you're Joe Flacco and you had to leave Baltimore, which, you know, kind of tore something out of your heart, and you had to tailor-made kind of pick a situation to go to, I mean, Denver's got to be the perfect one, because they're going to build the offense and make it comfortable to your most successful year, which was 2014 under Gary Kubiak.
Hey, as we let you go, Booger, really appreciate the time that you've spent with us. Do you look at this team in the AFC West? Do they have a chance to be a playoff caliber team?
I think they do. If I had to pick them in the playoffs, it'd probably be a wild card. I think when you look at what New England has done and how consistent they've been, Kansas City, and, you know, the heartbreak that they had losing the championship game at home last year, I like the Chargers. They suffer a devastating blow with Derwin James, but, you know, the AFC is very, very competitive. I think Denver's going to be there. I think that defense is going to be really outstanding. Bradley Chubb, I think he will compete for Defensive Player of the Year this year. I think he's going to be that good. I mean, I watched that young man his rookie year, and I watch him this year. And not only that, I just watch the people around him. When you ask everybody in that building who to keep an eye on, who's going to make a really big impression, and I was expecting them to say, you know, one of these rookies or maybe Flacco. They said, you know, the guy who's going to be a totally different player from year one to year two is Bradley Chubb. So I think they're going to be led by defense, and I look for Chubb to be in top 3 to 5 for Defensive Player of the Year.
Booger, man, you're the best. Really appreciate you. Congratulations on all the success, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Anytime, man. Thanks for having me. I always look up to you, Stink, man. Appreciate the compliment, buddy.
You got it, man.
All right, there he is, Booger McFarland, Monday Night Football, ESPN. We appreciate the insight. Some very, Very interesting comments there. Finishing up there with Bradley Chubb. All right, we'll react to that. Morning Brew is coming up. What does the Drew Lock injury mean for the Broncos and Lock moving forward? That's next.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents Schlereth and Evans.
Good morning.
Morning.
It's time for your Morning Brew.
Things are gonna get weird.
You're gonna keep lightning and you're gonna crack thunder.
Okay, this guy needs coffee and cooler stat.
Know what can really help you sort through these important issues?
What?
Orange mocha frappuccino!
Damn, Jimmy. This is some serious gourmet s***.
Let's get it on.
Going into it, I knew there was probably nothing broken in my hands. Just know my body pretty well. But again, x-rays being negative did feel pretty good.
Well, the x-rays were negative for Drew Lock's thumb, but the recovery is still going to be long enough that it could last into the first week of the regular season. So, Mark, just kind of overall, what does this whole Lock injury mean to the Broncos quarterback situation moving forward?
Well, obviously, you know, he was fighting, and it looked like he had usurped Hogan as the number two quarterback, and now all of a sudden you've got to reevaluate that, remake your plans, because he's going to miss a couple of weeks in preparation here. And even if he's ready for week one, he's not going to be ready to I can't imagine him being ready if he's not taking reps for you to feel comfortable about him being Joe Flacco's backup. So, you know, there was a lot to work on. This is obviously, a major setback. So it just leads me to believe this is, you know, even the way this has gone or the way this is going, that this becomes even more, that much more of a redshirt year, which may not be a bad thing, Mike. That may be the best thing that could happen, in reality. But again, you know, what we've seen of Hogan, I think you look at this situation, the quarterback situation right now, and you better be on pen and knee, praying that Joe Flacco stays healthy all year, because Joe Flacco misses time and you're not winning anything.
Next on the Morning Brew.
And he swings and it's a high drive, deep left field, bank of the warning track, out the wall, touch them all, Ahmed, number 17, and he gets the Diamondbacks a 1-0 lead.
All right, Diamondbacks Radio. The Rockies are obviously going nowhere, but I bring this up only because another terrible performance by the bullpen. Brian Shaw, who duped some people early on into thinking that he was somehow going to be salvageable here. It's not the case, as his ERA has now soared to up over 5.5. Mark, they got a lot of money owed to a lot of bad relievers for next season. Are these guys all going to be back? Is the hope that they'll just somehow figure it out next year while the Rockies are paying them millions and millions of dollars?
Unless you're willing to eat money, Mike, are you?
Which they're not going to do.
Because to move those guys, in the offseason, you're going to have to eat a lot of that salary.
Mm-hmm.
So unless you're willing to do that, you know, you're going to have the same. You're going to have the same issues. By the way, Ahmed had 17 homers. I bet you he's hit, of those 17, I bet you 7 of them come against the Rockies, almost half of them. I mean, every time that guy's up to bat, every time I'm watching a Diamondback game, that dude seems to be hitting homers. I don't know how many he's hit against us, but it just feels
six.
That way to me. It's six?
Six. Nice job, you.
I'm telling you, every time I watch that guy get up to bat, I'm like, how is this guy, you know, and he is a gold glove shortstop. The guy's a really good player, but I'm like, how has this guy got so many power numbers against us?
Six home runs and 16 RBI.
All right. Well, there he is.
Nice
he's,
job.
You know what he is? The new Goldschmidt.
Yeah, that's right.
He's the new Goldie. like he's the one guy we can't get out for whatever reason.
All right. Next on the Morning Bro.
If he's feeling a lot better, I got a brand new skin. It all trimmed up. It's been a journey, man. I feel a lot better. Working with the NFL, getting the right equipment. I've been working hard on the side. I've been going, taking care of the feet. So, man, I want to give it to my teammates. So, hopefully soon, you know, I didn't get to work. You know, too much noise right now. More work, less noise.
Yeah, more work, less noise.
Yeah.
But apparently it's all our fault for twisting this Antonio Brown story all out of context.
Poor victim.
He's just a victim. He's a victim, Antonio Brown. All right, so is all good now in Raiderland?
Oh, I'm sure they're excited about it. I mean, I'm sure they're excited about it. I'm talking to James Harrison yesterday on the set of FS1, Speak for Yourself. And like he's like, there's nobody. James Harrison is legendary for his work, his practice habits, his lifting, his workouts. And he's like, there's nobody that works harder than Antonio Brown. Like when he's there, and the, when he's there, again, when he's there. Yeah, you know, now he may miss a meeting and he may be late to, you know, a bunch of stuff, but when he's on the practice field, there's nobody works any harder than him. Like he'll be productive, he'll make plays, and you know, all will be, as long as he's making those plays, all will be forgotten. And as long as, let's face it, as long as he's getting the ball, like show me a game where all of a sudden he's not, you know, he's not getting enough targets in his mind. And then, you know, then there'll be a lot of things going down that, that don't feel right for him. And that's when he'll be a problem.
Next on the Morning Brew.
Mayfield shotgun back, getting heat, looks, lobs, Chubb's open, and he caught it and fights for the ball in the end zone. He's got it! Touchdown! Nick Chubb! What a catch!
Browns Radio. Mm-hmm. Baker Mayfield in a GQ article, for some, takes a blast at Giants quarterback Daniel Jones, who was drafted number 6 overall, quoted Mayfield in the magazine, blows my mind. Some people overthink it. That's where people go wrong. They forget you got to win. Either you have a history of winning and being that guy for your team, or you don't. Daniel Jones was 17-19 as a starter at Duke. Daniel Jones, by the way, when asked about it, said, I'm not sure I would do it that way, but everyone's got a different way of doing things. Doesn't seem to think that Daniel Jones feels that Baker was unfairly quoted or taken out of context there. He seems to be taking it to heart.
Yeah, I'm telling you, for a guy that keeps a list on everybody that's done him wrong, you know, you're kind of going down the same, you seem to be going down the same path. But I will say this, whatever, you know, I look at the Browns and I'm just, again, I'm on a wait and see because they are unbelievably talented, but there's a part of me that feels like they're kind of unbelievably mature or immature too. And this fascination with the Giants, like, hey, the Giants are doing the Giants, you know, like, you guys need to relax. I mean, it's just, it's unbelievable to me, between he and Odell Beckham Jr. that it feels like Odell Beckham Jr. wants to be, like, he wants to be a Madison Avenue star more than he wants to be a football star. That's just what it feels like.
Cleveland, I'm looking at Cleveland's schedule. They do have the opportunity to get off to a quick start. Home against the Titans, at the Jets to start the season, then they get the Rams. Before they go to Baltimore, to San Francisco, they come here on November 3rd. That'll be the fourth, of five road games. So a 5-game stretch, four of them on the road. And that'll be the final game in that stretch, when they come out here on November 3rd. So, hey, all right. They're talking the talk. I think they have become one of the more fascinating stories in the NFL in a very short time. Let's see how they back it up. By the way, their head coach is pretty audacious too. I mean, he's not like running around telling these guys to tamp it down.
Right. Yeah, he's not shy either. Freddie Kitchens ain't shy either. Talk about a meteoric rise. We'll see how that works out. And Bob, their old line coach, their former line coach, Bob Wiley, has not been real complimentary. So anyhow. Interesting. We'll see how it works out.
All right, coming up next, Bradley Chubb used an interesting word to describe the players' relationship with the coaching staff last year. What does it all mean? What was the message being sent? That's next. Taking out some of the leftovers from the Monday night game. You know, you got the immediate aftermath of how you respond, what you respond to, and then you got a day to sort of process it all and what are some of the things that maybe slipped through the cracks. There were a couple comments made post-game, Mark, that I want to run past you. First of all, Bradley Chubb.
Uh-huh.
One Chubb only. Said in talking about the defense, talking about the team, quote, Vic has been teaching us and saying to us, and it's working, all the things he's done. He gives us little tips now and then, and those help us out too. It's just about trusting the whole staff and making sure we're coming in every day with the right mindset. I feel like after last year, there was a little bit of a rebellious mindset among some of the players that was directed towards the staff. but I feel like everyone is buying in now. Interesting choice of words. How do you read rebellious towards the coaches?
Well, rebellious towards the coaches because the players didn't feel like the coaches were putting them in the best position to win.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, the players didn't feel like the coaching staff was the best situation. So when you've got a coach asking you to do something that you know as a player can't be done, then there's like you guys, you know, there's a lack of credibility.
Yeah, but how do you show your rebellion then? How does that manifest itself?
Well, then the way it manifests itself is that they're coaching one thing and you guys as players are doing something entirely different.
It's mind-boggling.
So you're guys are like, freelancing out there.
Absolutely. You're just like, that doesn't, what they're asking us to do is, it's an unsound principle. It's, you know, it is what it is. Like, this is over now, but I had guys reach out to me last season. Guys even on that defense last season reach out to me saying how much they didn't like what was going on. So, you know, that's just...
Without naming names, can you be specific about what they were complaining about?
They were complaining about coverage schemes. They were complaining about the techniques in coverage schemes, that they weren't done. They were coaching things that weren't the most efficient way to get things done from a player's perspective. And I've been there, Mike. There's got to be an open line of communication. So, like, I have been there as a player where a coach coaches you some technique and you just say, hey, listen, man, that technique, I understand what you're coaching. Like, when you have enough respect and there's enough of a relationship there, you say, hey, I respect what you're coaching. I respect the work that you're putting in. But let me tell you, from my perspective, the guy who's got to go out on the football field and execute it, why that doesn't work, why that technique is garbage. And then you can have an adult conversation about it because you're connected. You're both on the same page, right? And then if you can convince your coach goes, all right, that makes sense to me. Let's move on. That's good coaching. That's understanding. Now, if you say to your coach, well, let me tell you why this bothers me. And the coach says, this is the way we do it. It's our system, right? Then you're like, you guys, to me, all right, I called, as you know, I called 5 Arizona games last year. Man, hell bent for election. Steve Wilkes was the head coach, former defensive coordinator in Carolina, you know, coordinated that defense that took them to the Super Bowl. They went 15-1. And Steve Wilkes was like one of these coaches that was my system. The system is tried and true. The system works. The system this, the system this, the system this. And you don't have the players to execute what you're asking them to do. So you went from this 3-4 system with smaller, lighter players. You had a safety playing middle linebacker, and it was all predicated on blitzing 60% of the time and always being on somebody's edge and making more big plays than you gave up. And then all of a sudden you came into a 4-3 system where the linebackers have to be taken on guards, and you're asking 213-pound DBs to take on guards to basically two-gap them, you know, spear them right down the middle, keep both hands free, and slide off and make tackles. And they're getting engulfed. And the system didn't work, but yet you're going, it's the system, it's the system, it's the system. And that staff got fired too, because players are looking at you like, what they're asking me to do, I'm physically incapable of doing. So, you know, that's how the rebellion will begin, is when there isn't that line of communication and you're not confident in your coaching enough to say, okay, I read you, I understand what you're saying, and I understand why that doesn't work for you. Let's work to some type of conclusion, as opposed to, hey, this is the system and we know the system works, so just execute it. Does that make sense?
Okay, so were these Vance Joseph complaints or Joe Woods complaints?
Mike, I really don't care.
Yeah.
Well, I do.
You do.
Well, I do because I really hope the money that they saved not paying Wade Phillips was well spent.
Yeah, well,
because
there were
that's what you opened yourself up to by right. not wanting to pay Wade.
There were plenty on both sides. There were complaints. There were definitely Joe Woods complaints, and definitely, I mean, it just, you know,
but how'd that work out?
Yeah, that happens when you're losing, Mike. That, you know, that it happens.
Simple as that. Win more games.
happens when you're losing. I mean, you know, I mean, now if you want to talk about rebellion, how about you're 6-6 and you got a chance to maybe, you know, fight for the playoffs and you got a guy that's the leader on your team chasing sacks and jumping off sides. Like that to me is part of a rebellion, you know, that's part of,
I'm going to get mine. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm, you know, that, and again, a team that subconsciously, hey, I know we're 6-6, but we're not very good.
Well, this is all, I guess, grist for the mill that for those who believe that, that coaching is the reason why they were 6-10 and 5-11, there is no reason whatsoever why this is not a 9 or 10 win team this year. Right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
That's what I'm hearing.
The people that want to talk about, the coaching. Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, this should be music to your ears. That, see, there you go. This is what I've been saying. They went 6-10 because of lousy coaching. Watch what this team does this year. Okay. Great. Can't wait. 9-10 wins. Here we go.
It's a lot of pressure, Mike. 9 or 10 wins.
Why?
It feels like a lot of pressure.
Why?
Well, I mean, 9 or 10 wins is hard. It's hard, Mike.
Well, I mean, if you can point directly to the failure of the coaches, the rebellious attitude of the players, and they're all bought in now, everyone's happy, everything's hunky-dory, then why is it so hard?
Hey, you know what's interesting?
I'm serious. Why can't it be done? Why shouldn't it be done?
Well, it could be done. It could be done. I think depth is an issue. I mean, I think the coaching was, there's no question the coaching was bad. I think we've established the coaching wasn't very good. And it's not just the head coach. It was, you know, it was the assistant coaches and everything else. So I think that's part of it. But that said, I still think that doesn't cover up the lack of talent. And there is, we've seen in the last two preseason games, a lack of depth on this football team.
Well, we shall see. That's what makes this season, I think, one of the more fascinating Broncos seasons come along in some time. Coming up, for those of you who are concerned about the Broncos' inability to finish off drives with a touchdown, relax. Help is on the way. We'll explain next.